Unsupervised 3, a tribute and an understanding. With these unsupervised podcasts, I seem to do the intro before I do the main one, and we're just going to keep that trend going. This one is a personal one to me, and I'm actually very nervous to do it because it's a tribute to my grandfather and an understanding around grief. When Granddad died, the outpouring of support that I got from my fellow coders and my brothers was very humbling and very appreciated. And through that came a lot of stories about people that they'd lost and loved and how they dealt with grief and how they found it a very difficult process to deal with. And I wanted to just sit down and try and unpack that a little bit, a lot for myself, however, also to help others. And just a tribute because I understand myself better now than I did before. I don't want to waste too much time with this because I'm very nervous. I want to get into it and see where it goes. So thanks very much. I appreciate it. I've got some cool podcasts coming up. Things never stop moving here, guys. We're always moving forward, even if it's just half a step at a time. Thanks to Jono for the intro and Rowdy for bathing the sun. We'll talk soon. Cheers. G'day everyone, another unsupervised. Someone's left me alone with a microphone. I wanted to sit down and pay a bit of a tribute and give a bit of an understanding. And the tribute is to my grandfather, Kenneth Emerson Peart. For those that don't know, that's my middle name, Emerson. I had never actually truly experienced grief until my grandfather passed away. And I don't want to get into that now, how that affected me. That's the second half of this podcast. I wanted just to pay tribute for a second because I didn't understand the effect that that man had on my life. When I was little, my mum went back to school and I spent a lot of time with my grandparents. And granddad ran a prominent plumbing business in Ballarat, and he used to come home for lunch, cook lunch as it was back in the day. But he'd also do a lot of work in his workshop out the back. And as a 2, 3, 4 year old, he initially tried to keep me out of his workshop. However, never stopped me. I just used to climb the fence and, scale the fence or go under the gate, or he'd turn around and I'd be there. And it's funny, after he passed, a lot of memories came flooding back. It's not until someone's gone that you realise how much that they affected you, and the memories of that your time together that are all hidden away in your subconscious somewhere, they come back to you. And I remember being a 2, 3, 4 year old, and I was a precocious little shit. I'm sure a lot of you will be surprised to hear. And anyway, I used to find my way out to his workshop, and I do remember him used to try and shoo me away. However, after a while, I think he realised the futility in that, because I just kept coming back. And he put me to work. I used to play with lead sheets. Isn't that crazy? You think about that now, all the lead stuff that came out of the 80s and the 90s. I used to play with sheets of lead, bend it and make sculptures out of it. Because a lot of the pipes back then had lead sleeves and stuff like that. Like, that's how it was. And then I remember him giving me little jobs. I'd put like bolts together or, fittings together or... And look, I don't even know whether he needed any of those fittings or those bolts. I think he was just trying to keep me busy. And it's a funny thing, I'm very mechanically minded. I always like pulling stuff apart and putting it back together and do my own work on my own cars and, rebuilt motors and all that sort of stuff over the years. And I sort of wondered where all that came from. And it wasn't until Granddad passed that I realised it was from him. It was all those little tasks that he gave me, pull this apart, put it back together, figure out how it works. And I'd ask him questions and he'd tell me. Folding guttering with the big metal bender, the old school, not hydraulic, big weighted metal bender. The bloody machine would have been about 3 ton or something like that. And I remember him, I can't quite remember what he put in there. It was a stick or something. He put something in the metal bender to show me what had happened if I got my fingers caught in there. And it wasn't pretty, so I never stuck my finger in there. Come close a couple of times. Because he used to fold his own gutters. He used to have sheet steel. He'd fold his own gutters for, special jobs for houses and stuff. And I used to help him with all that. We'd go and hit the golf ball across the road. We'd go and kick the footy across the road. We'd ride big sheets of cardboard down the hill. My dad tells stories, it used to be car bonnets. He didn't quite do that with us, however. The old heater boxes, the big hot water systems, and big enough boxes to fit 3 or 4 cousins on there and push us down the hill on a grass hill. Straight out onto a road, mind you. However, I had no idea how profound effect on my life that he had. He's got a sick sense of humour. He used to like to scare people. The story goes that as a kid in the late 30s, early 40s, he got a ferret while his pregnant mother was in the outhouse, in a proper outhouse, mind you, and shoved the ferret in there with her while she was heavily pregnant. He thought it was the funniest thing in the world. And to this day, my father's the same. We scaring people. I just think it's fucking hilarious. you know, and if someone gives me a good scare, I think that's funny as well, and just the reactions on people's faces. And look, I recognise that that's probably not the best thing. However, that comes from him. You know, we all, in our own way, look like him. There's no mistake in the Peart Boys when you line us up together. You know, my mum used to be stopped in the street and said, "Oh, he must be one of Ken's boys, you know, Ken's grandsons. Which Peart are you married to?" You know, and it's quite a fascinating thing. You know, I'm sitting here remembering a thousand different things and trying to pluck them out, you know. And I remember we used to have Christmas at his house, and he rigged up these gutters off his roof and got these big racing cars and laid like a drag strip off the roof. You know, we'd jump up on the ladder and push the cars down there. You know, 4 or 5 foot off the ground. You know, I remember having the other cousins there. You know, if there was 3 or 4 of us, we could all hang off the clothesline, and he'd spin us around as fast as he could. Nan wasn't there, mind you, when some of these things went down. You know, I remember the tree that he had that used to go over the top of his part shed, and it used to go under the roof. And he never cut it down. But every single time I'd climb that tree, I'd go and sit on the roof. And he'd come out and tell me to get down, and I'd go back up and I'd get back on the roof again. And you know, I spent a lot of time there as a kid, you know, cutting the rose bush with Nan and, you know, making salads and all that sort of stuff. However, it was all in preparation for when Grandad came home for lunch, you know. And then when Grandad came home from work, if I was still there, if, you know, Mum hadn't come pick me up, I could, you know, help him out in his workshop. And you know, he'd sit there and he'd tell me stories about his riding. He was a champion cyclist back in the day. And I remember my other grandfather, Ralph, bought me the first one, a proper BMX, like BMX, banded BMX back in the 80s, and I couldn't reach the bloody pedals on the thing. However, I remember just wanting to ride the bike, you know, because I'd heard so many stories. Every time we'd drive to Melbourne, he'd tell us stories about he used to ride down this track and ride down that track, and, you know. And he was a genuine champion of cycling back in his day. And I grew up with those stories. You know, and those that follow us on Instagram and heard some of the podcasts we talked about, I love cycling to this day. You know, I love riding. You know, I prefer to be in the bush with my mountain bike. However, you know, I rode 14 Ks yesterday. I'm going to ride in the morning. You know, it's an integral part of my life that keeps me balanced. And you know, the reason I ride is because of him. You know, I even went as far as to put his initials on my bike, you know, just because, you know, I want him to ride with me, you know. I remember my first pocket knife. And he gave me my first pocket knife. It was a little Swiss Army knife, you know, with the two little blades, and then he had a little toothpick and the tweezers. It was only a little thing. And he gave it to me because I joined the Cubs, you know, the Cub Scouts. And, you know, I'd made leader of my troop 2 gold bars of the red troop. And when I told him that, he took me into his office. Now, of all the places that I could go, there was, you know, there was only a couple of places off limits. There was his bedroom. He'd go nuts if we went into his bedroom. All the cousins can attest to that. He wasn't happy when we'd go down to the cellar, however he let us go down there. However, you weren't allowed in his office. He had a little office in between the garage and his tool room, and I just wasn't allowed in there. You know, and as I say, he let me get away with a lot. However, he did still discipline me if he had to, and he just wasn't allowed in there. And must have been about 8 or 9, I imagine, since I was in Cub Scouts for a while. And I remember sitting in the office. He came in to come to the office, and that was just a treat in itself, you know what I mean? And some of his trophies were in there, some of his cycling trophies and bits and pieces and things I'd never seen before. And I remember him sitting across the desk, and I sat on a chair, and he handed me the pocket knife, and he said to me, "Pointy end away from you, don't stab yourself, and don't stab anyone else, and cut away from you." And gave it to me. He was a man of few words, as most peat men are. I'm trying to break that cycle a little bit because we need to understand ourselves and evolve a little bit more. And it was just one of the awesomest moments of my childhood, you know, receiving that little pocket knife. And I used that thing, had it for a long time. I don't remember what happened to it. I think I lost it on one of my bush adventures. You know, however, the day I got that, I'll never forget that, you know. Yeah, and the times you'd get to go down to the cellar and he'd let you take a drink down there and you sit in the cellar. Now, this is a cellar, mind you, that he just decided one day to get under the house and dig himself a cellar. Just the kind of bloke he was. I remember being at the Murray. You know, yeah, going to the Murray was a very special thing, and you had to be selected. You had to be a certain age, and you had to be a certain, you know, I suppose, deemed to have a certain level of responsibility before he would let you come to the Murray. And I remember the first time that I went, and my younger brother came with us, and Josh and Nathan, and we were bouncing around in the back of his panel van, the old HZ panel van, V8 in the front of it. And there was overflow back then. The Murray was over full, and there was overflow, and there's all these European carp in the overflow. And he stopped, and he'd cut lengths of Rio, because Nathan was bigger than me, and it was me, then it was Joshua, then it was Elijah. And he had four different lengths of Rio for us to basically belt the fuck out of the carp, because they were destroying the river and chasing away all the cod. And I tell you what, as a young fella, that was a whole pile of fun. Not very politically correct, however, you know, granddad did things his way, and it's another time, you know what I mean? 2018, we're talking early 90s. And, yeah, taking photos of us with our dead carp. And, yeah, I think it must have been 10, I think. And, yeah, taking photos of our dead carp, proud as punch, the biggest carp. Could barely hold on to these bloody fish. I don't know where those photos are gone. They must be around the collection somewhere. Someone of the guys must have them, uncles or something. And that was the start. Like, that was like 10 minutes along into the bush along the Murray. We were, you know, murdering carp with big Rio bars. And we went and made camp, and we did this, we did that. And went to go and get some firewood. And my cousin Nathan was driving. He was 12 or 13 at the time. And he says to me, you know, he's next to Nathan and I'm next to him, and he looks at me and goes, "Do you want to drive, Triff?" And I just said, "Okay." I got in the passenger seat of this old Kingswood panel van, and I could reach the pedals, but I couldn't serve the steering wheel. And I said, "Granted, I can't serve the steering wheel." He goes, "Don't you worry about that. You just press the accelerator and the brake, and you steer where I tell you to steer." So we're putting through the bush, me driving this panel van. I can't even see where I'm going, you know. And Grandad with a guiding hand on the wheel, letting me turn the wheel, you know. So that was the first time I ever drove a car. I couldn't even fucking see where I was going. And it's funny, I don't remember much else about that first trip to the Murray. I remember him building a water slide. There used to be an offshoot where we used to camp. Him building a water slide into there, like big bit of black tarp, because he was a plumber. You get the big black tarp, so 10 foot wide, this bloody thing, and he just bottles and bottles of detergent. And you just do a running jump and fly into the creek, you know. And yeah, it got pretty gnarly there towards the end. And I remember the rope swing, the tie swing, and the length of this thing. I don't know how he got that rope above that tree. Obviously, sinkers or something. Someone might have been there. Knowing him, he probably climbed the fucking thing and did it from there. So another story I would share with you guys. But that bloody rope swing, you could get going, and you were swinging 20, 30 metres out over the river. You know, and the Murray River back then was a fast flowing, you know, it was about where we used to camp, probably about 80, 100 metres wide from memory back then, you know. And it was, as I say, like fair drop, 20 foot drop to the river. We're just hanging off the tie swing, having the time of our lives, you know. And the reason that I said he might have climbed the bloody tree and tied that thing off is because, you know, when I was 15, I think he was in his, you know, he must have been in his 70s, late 60s, early 70s. He'd pulled up and I was messing around with the footy out the front of my house. You know, I grew up in Victoria, you know, had a sharing in my hand 8 months of the year. That's just how it was. And I was kicking the footy to myself, and Granddad pulled up, and he didn't even go and say hello to Mum and Dad. He just started kicking the footy with me. So not only was this guy kicking the footy with me at 70 plus years of age, and doing well too, don't think he wasn't a dab hand with a football. However, whatever happened, I think I kicked it, and it went straight up into the tree. We had this big tall gum tree at the front of our house, and it went up in the tree. Like, I must have tried to kick it as high as I can, I think. And it was up in the tree. And I climb this tree most days. You know, if any of the boys from Victoria that I used to play hide and seek with back in the day at my house back then in Bradbury Street, you could never fucking find me. I was in that tree the whole time. I don't know why you guys never looked up. However, it was right up in the branches. And I climbed up and I wasn't willing to go and get it. And then Granddad huffed and puffed and said, oh, well, I'll go and get it. And at 70 plus years old, he's hanging out of the limbs of this tree. You know, spindly little limbs, you know. And my mum comes out at this stage to find out what's going on and sees Granddad up a tree, 30 metres up a tree. You know, did he get the footy down? Of course he did. Did he come down safely? Of course he did. You know. You know, he'd wake us up, you know, so many trips to Mount Cole, Mount Bunyong, all these places, the Grampians. You know, I remember racing up to the pinnacle at the Grampians, you know, racing up ladders as quick as we could go, you know, as fast as we could, you know, racing to a cliff edge, actually, is what we would do. Beautiful spot, and you know, I can't wait to take, you know, the kids there and Kath there. Yeah, and we'd always be up at Sparrow Farm, you know, and get up at 5 o'clock in the morning. Granddad said to get up, Dad'd get up and he'd wake us up, and we'd go for drives to, you know, let's say Mount Bunyong, Mount Cole, Torquay, Lawn, Apollo Bay, Grampians, all the, you know, all these places in Victoria. You know, and that'd just be Hanging Rock, you know, that'd just be a Saturday afternoon or a Sunday afternoon. He'd get the family together and we'd all go, you know. You know, and some of those experiences are seminal experiences of my life, you know, exploring the Grampians, and I remember the big sheep rock hill, big angled sheep rock, and, you know, just some of the amazing things that we saw that he used to take us to have a look at. You know, those seminal experiences that define me, you know, and define me as a young fella, and and gave me my love of the bush, you know, and gave me my love of exploration and wanting to explore and, you know, just walk off into the bush and see what you could find. That's what we used to do, you know, follow granddad. You know, so many of the things that define me as a person, because obviously through the podcast and through me finding myself and trying to be the best man I can be for myself and my wife and my family, I've had to go back to the essence of who I am. And it turns out that there was a lot of him in there. You know, the things that I love to do now were the things I used to love to do back then that he showed me how to do. You know, that he took us on those adventures as a family. You know, the mechanical knowledge that I have of taking things apart and putting it back together, that's what he used to get me to do. You know, I'd sit there and figure out how things were. You know, I say, sixth sense of humour, his laugh. He'd, you know, you'd run past him, he'd grab you on the wrist. And because he was a plumber, he just had hands like iron manacles. There's no way you were getting out of there. And I've done that to my kids. And they hate it. And I think it's funny. And he had it and he thought it was funny. It's just, it's these things that get passed down to us. You know, my dad does it to my kids. You know what I mean? Like, it's one of those things. You know, there's a thousand different stories that I could tell you from my own personal experience. However, one of the things that I realized also when I was down there is that how many lives he actually touched. Like, how did one bloke fit in so much? You know, have such a profound effect on so many people on so many levels. You know? Because I know how much personal time he spent with me, and it was a fair bit. You know, there was 13, 14 cousins, and they all had their own stories, you know, they all had these moments. You know, and then obviously we had moments together, and, you know, moments as a family, and Christmases, and all those sorts of things, you know. You know, I'm not going to say, you know, I'm sure he wasn't a perfect man, I'm sure he sacrificed a lot, and, you know, no one is. You know, I'm not going to pretend and put him up on an altar, because it's not about being perfect. However, it's just about the effect that he had on my existence and a lot of people's existence. You know, I didn't realize, because everyone had these personal stories. You know, like, I'm sort of in the middle of my cousins, so, you know, there's cousins that are 10, 15 years older than me that would have been with him, you know, obviously for a long time before I was born. And, you know, and they had their experiences, and then there's the cousins after me. Everyone had their thing that they experienced with him. You know, and to see all his cycling sashes and the scrapbook, and, you know, I think when I was looking at that scrapbook, I'm pretty sure Granddad showed me that once or twice. You know, I couldn't touch it, however, he showed me. You know, to read those articles, and there's hundreds of them from his cycling career, and, you know, his plumbing business, and, you know, he was a high degree mason. You know, to see the ceremony the masons put on at his funeral was unbelievable. And, you know, he affected so many of us in such a profound way. And I suppose myself personally, his passing helped me understand myself better, and also made me realise that life is short, and maybe this is our only go round. I don't believe that. A lot of people said, oh, do you actually believe that now? No, I don't. I still have a belief around energy, and the fact that energy never ends, it only transmutes into something else. Forgive the cars in the background too, guys. I'm having to record this one out in the front. So, just put a lot more gravity on the situation. And, you know, the grief that I experienced really properly for the first time was for something else. And I don't think it's, if that's, I don't think you ever actually truly get over it. I think it just becomes part of your existence, and you now exist without that person in your life. Grief was a funny thing, you know, and it wasn't something I'd ever truly experienced. You know, it's an interesting thing, you know, like, I remember the Monday, I think it was, on days it's all a bit blurry. My dad rang me and said the granddad had had a fall and broken his hip or his leg, or, you know, and he had to have surgery. And I said to my father, and he agreed with me, we actually had a conversation about the fact that we actually hope he didn't make it through the surgery. Because granddad was a very, very active man. And the last couple of years of his life, he had statism and had to have some heart surgery, and he lost the vigour that he once had. And, you know, he told all of us that he didn't want to be a vegetable. He wanted to go out being able to look after himself and make his own decisions. And the recovery for a 90-year-old man from a broken leg, he would have been stuck in a bed or stuck in a chair for a long time. And he was a stubborn old bastard, didn't do his recovery properly anyway, just did his thing, you know. I mean, you're talking about a bloke that up until, you know, 2-3 years ago was walking 5 to 10 kilometres a day, you know, with his dog, and doing it no problem. And, you know, I had that conversation with Dad and said, yeah, I said that, you know, it'd be best for him if he doesn't make it through the surgery. And then there was a wait, and I think the gravity of what I was saying did hit me a little bit, you know, or maybe he won't make it through the surgery. And then he did. Not surprisingly, he's a stubborn bastard. He wanted to keep going, you know. Obviously. However, coming out of that surgery and sort of realising, I think he must have woke up in a pretty strange place. He couldn't move. He tried to get out of bed and had a fall, and, you know, he was trying to get out, I think. And anyway, trying to get him for an x-ray, and he took his exit, had a heart attack or whatever, and just passed away. Now, you know, I've been talking about it with Kath, and, you know, me and my dad have been talking about it, me and my brother have been talking about granddad passing away for a long time. Because the reality was that he was gonna. However, I didn't understand how I was going to feel. And that feeling was grief. And as I say, I don't think you get over grief. I think it stays with you for the rest of your life. You just exist now without that person in it. And it's up to you what you do with that feeling and that emotion, you know. And I suppose leading up to the, you know, that happening, I have been working a lot on trying to understand my feelings. And, you know, we talk a lot about being the observer. And, you know, grief was such a foreign concept to me. And I think it's another one of those things that's such a foreign concept to men. And I don't think we know how to deal with some of these deeper emotions, you know. As I said in the intro, the outpouring of support and love that I got from my friends, my family, and fellow coders, and you guys, the audience, I truly appreciate it. However, with that came some stories. You know, blokes opened up and shared their stories of grief with me. And There's a lot of confusion around it, a lot of not being able to understand it, I don't think. And because I was in grief when these things were happening, I thought to myself that I would eventually sit down and do what I'm doing now. I would try and observe what was happening with me, so I could try and provide a perspective on it, you know, try and provide some information and an understanding. You know, that's why this one's called a tribute and understanding, because we need to understand these feelings and these emotions that come up. You know, and I think grief's a hard one for men, because whether or not we live multiple lives or not, we are descendants of soldiers, all of us at some point. And as a soldier, you know, your mates die around you all the time, and you just got to keep going, you got to keep fighting. And I think that's a lot of what we try and do. I mean, I kept working. I didn't take any time off after I found out. I sort of had to, you know, I was a little bit numb, and, you know, unless Granddad's leg was hanging off, he would have went to work, you know, so I just went to work, you know. I've got to look after my family, and I know he would have understood that. I think the default reaction emotion for a lot of men with deeper emotions, not just grief, heartbreak, you know, these sorts of things, is anger. And look, I definitely felt anger. I went up to the shed, you know, after a couple of days, I went up to the shed and just hit the punching bag until my hands were bleeding. And when I mean bleeding, like, my knuckles were raw on both hands by the time I was done. And it wasn't that, you know, it wasn't, and that's the whole thing, you know, he was 90 years old, you know, like, he had a, if we can live a life, if we all live a life as half as well as he lived, he's fucking out, you know. So it wasn't that, it's not like I was angry because he died, because, you know, it was his time. He was an old man, it was time for him to go. He had a good innings. He didn't go before his time, he went when he was ready. You know, and he fought till the end, and then decided, no, he's had enough, you know. And look, as a high degree Mason, I'm pretty sure he understands things about life and death and the cycles that we don't. So he chose to go. I think I was just looking for an outlet, you know. I went for a ride, you know. I was in pieces when I went for that ride. In pieces, you know, there's a post on the Instagram feed that you could see, you know, my head hanging in grief, you know. I had to do a deal, you know. I couldn't ride on the road. I had to ride down to the rail trail and stay on the rail trail. So I rode all the way to Lowood and back, it was like 20 Ks or something. You know, that was the ride that I figured out. He's the reason I ride. You know, I don't ride competition, I've never ridden competition, however, you know, it's a very, you know, I can count the number of years that I haven't had a bike in my life on one hand, you know, intermittently, you know, between my, you know, late teens to now, I've probably not had a bike for only 2 or 3 years, and I've always had a bike. You know, you guys have got to understand that when I got sick, that bike was part of my recovery. You know, that's part of the thing that brought me back. I used to ride to the pool and go for a swim. And that was the thing that brought me back. And then again, when I started again, you know, 18 months, 2 years ago, I dragged that same bike out because I didn't get rid of it, and gave it a clean up, pumped the tyres up, and I did 600-700 Ks on that bike before I got the new one. And that was too small for me, it didn't matter, I just had to get on the bike. You know, that's where I found my freedom, that's where I love it, you know. You know, there was a period, I suppose, you know, so it wasn't anger, I didn't feel anger. I did a little bit, but not because he passed. The sadness, I think, it's grief, it's sadness, you know, like there was, you know, leading up to the funeral and for a couple of weeks afterwards, there wasn't a day where I didn't cry. You know, and it's, you know, it's a few months down the track now, a couple of months down the track now, and I still find myself every now and again pausing and just remembering, and I will have tears. You know, and I suppose one of the things about being open to your emotions, and I was during this period, is that I didn't deny those tears. You know, and I think if that's one of the lessons that I have for the other blokes out here, out there that are listening, is that if you're feeling grief and you think you need to cry, I think it's a good thing to cry. It's not unmanly to cry. It's not a soft thing. It takes fucking courage to recognise that you're sad and you need to cry. You know, you cry for a reason. That's a release. That's a human emotional release that needs to be given its due for its purpose, you know. I suppose I became numb through a lot of it, and you know, I bought an awesome black suit, you know, one of the nicest suits I've ever owned, which I still haven't touched from that day. Haven't even opened it and had a look at it. However, I remember being in Connor and organising the suit and looking sharp and then looking in the mirror and realising what that suit was for, and having I was sort of bawling my eyes out there for a little while, you know, and it was a gamut of emotions. It was sadness, it was anger, it was just numb, you know, the joy of life got taken away momentarily, you know, there was a hole that, you know, because he was always there, you know, like, you know, in my 20s I used to fly down there specifically to go and see Nan and Grandad, just to go and see them, see how they were. And obviously his life moved on and I, you know, had kids and did all that sort of stuff. That became less and less. I always used to speak to him at Christmas and Easter, and, you know, other times during the year if I had news. You know, and I know Grandad was very proud of me and my brother, because my brother explored the world a bit further than I did, you know, and I went to PNG and, you know, we got out there and we did stuff and we saw things, you know, worked in the desert and the bush and all that sort of stuff, and he used to love hearing that stories, you know. And it's just the realisation, you know. And those are the things that help you get through it. Those are the things that make the grief move on. You know, for those that are either experiencing grief or still have some that in their hearts, remember that those people they'll never die. They may be gone, but then they'll never die because you are part of them. And, you know, This is, you will always be part of them. And when I realised that, is that his time may be over and, you know, our time is still here. However, the echo through eternity that he'll have, because, you know, so my dad and me and then through to my kids and their kids, you know what I mean? That the things that, and the personality traits and the genealogical, the stories and, it's going to echo into eternity. You know, so those people are never gone. And when I realised that, when I truly realised that, that's what drew me out of my funk, I suppose. I still cried every day, you know, I still had very down moments, and however, that's what helped me out, you know. And it's obviously building to, you know, going down for his funeral, and you know, that was something else. And to see all my family and my cousins and, you know, some of these guys I hadn't seen properly in a very long time, and see the raw emotion on their faces and the touching tributes. And, you know, I've got to just say that my cousin Hayley smashed it out of the park for all us grandkids, you know. I did have it in my mind that I might have stood up and said something, you know, but after she spoke, we didn't have any, I didn't have any reason to, she nailed it. You know, and the wake and the drinks for the boys afterwards were, you know, my cousins, and, you know, it was quite funny, we realised that everyone had shifted up the hierarchy, so battle lines were drawn, and it's all got Game of Thrones out the back of my uncle's place. You know, and it's quite funny, you know, Grandad loved his port, and when we got his old port bottles out, part of the special collection that my uncle still had, there was one extra. Every single person got one there, all my cousins and my aunties, and there was one extra at the end. Of course there was. It was for him. You know, one of those ports was fantastic. The other one doesn't matter. Did the trick. You know, it was such a fantastic celebration of his life. And I think, you know, there's going to be those out there that might listen to this that didn't get that celebration, you know, where someone left this mortal coil too soon, and you might not have got to say what you wanted to say to them. And look, there's elements of that. For me, you know, however, I know Grandad was happy that I was finally happy. You know, and a couple of people who saw him in distress at the end went to see him in the morgue. However, I didn't have to do that, because the last physical memory I had of him was great. You know, I took him down to meet, took Kath down to meet him, and we had a roar with us, and she still stamps her feet. He taught her how to do that. So every time she stands there and stamps her feet, it's like, and that's one of the things that made me realise that he's never gone. He'll always be here through one way or another. And we went and had lunch, and he saw that I was happy and I was in love, and I was finally, you know, with someone who truly loved me for who I was. And, you know, I'd never seen him happier for me, you know, and that meant the world to me. And this is before he went to the home, and anyway, we had the hire car, went back in the hire car, and he stops me, and I wind down the window. He was deaf as a post, but I'm sure, you know, Grandad has his ways, and whispering, he whispers into my ear, he goes, "Your wife's a bit of a right, you did well there, mate." You know, gives me a pat on the shoulder and a cheeky wink and a smile, and I backed away, and there's the same, my last memory of him is him standing on the driveway waving at me. In his house, in his element. You know, and I couldn't ask for a better memory of that. You know, I'd obviously talked to him on the phone after that several times, however, that was the physical thing he said to me. And, you know, just that sense of humour and that cheekiness and that, all that, and that's me, you know. I'm a cheeky fucker, you know, to those that know me well. And, you know, and it's things like that that make the grief easier. as I say, it's not something that ever goes away. I don't think it'll ever go away, because from here on in, the world exists now without him in it, and therefore it will never be the same, because the rock of the family is no longer there. My nan is still there, and, you know, love her to bits. However, granddad was granddad, and he was always there. He was larger than life. So I think, you know, what's my understanding of grief? My understanding is that it's never something that you'll get over entirely. It's something that'll be with you forever, because that person who has made you feel that grief is no longer there. So it can never be the same because they're gone. However, what you can do is live your life appreciating the times that they gave you, and using whatever they gave you to your best abilities, you know. And I can see how you could wallow in grief. I can see how people don't find their way out of that. And for those that may feel like they haven't, there is a way out. And it just comes through understandings that those people are never gone. Those things that they shared with you and the influences that they had, they'll never go away. And no one that truly loved you, or who you truly love, would want you to wallow in that grief. They'd want you to live your life. And live your life to the best of your ability. So if you are feeling grief, you're going through that, or you have had grief and maybe not dealt with it, sit with it and feel it. And it's immense, and it's deep, and there's sorrow, and there's sadness, and there's just these deep emotions that fucking sent me for a six. However, coming out the other side now of that, it's made me a better man. It's made me understand myself better. It's shown me the depth of the emotion that I can have. There's always a silver lining, guys. And as I say, these people that have left us, whether before their time or at their time, or they would want us to be the best versions of ourselves. They wouldn't want us to wallow. Honour them, sure. Show tribute, absolutely. Have acknowledged that they were just people and they did what they did. And if they loved you as you love them, then you gotta do what you gotta do. And use it as fuel. You can't half live a life in the past for someone that isn't here anymore. Because if energy does just transmute into the universe, they're gone. They're gone, they're having a good time. Do I believe they have the ability to check in on us every now and again? Yeah, I do. Is that me wanting to believe that? Possibly. However, that's what I choose to believe. Does that mean heaven and hell and all that sort of stuff? That's not a topic for tonight. However, my understanding of grief is that don't deny it. Feel it. Embrace it even. However, do your best to observe it. And boys, let those tears out if you haven't already. If you have, well done. Well done for the courage that it takes to do that. And if the tears come again, it's okay. It's okay. You're allowed to be sad. You're allowed to feel sorrow over losing someone that you love. You know, I suppose, I think I've gone on enough for this one, because there isn't much more to say apart from live your life, guys. That's what they'd want. And use whatever they gave you and be the best that you can be. Honour them, show them tribute. However, that's what they would want. I know that's what Grandad wants for me, and he wants for all of us. and make your life worth living, guys. You know, Granddad just lived his life. And those that he loved and those that he wanted to have in his life, he just welcomed them in. He just did his thing and then took us along for the ride. That's honestly what he did. So, you know. And look, I suppose, you know, I want to end it with the same question I had a little while ago. What if this is our one shot in this three-dimensional human form? What if this is, and if it's not our one shot, say we live multiple lives, what if this is the one that matters? What if this is the one where you get to sort your fucking shit out and actually truly make a difference? What are you doing? What should you be doing? What are you not doing that you should be doing? Whatever that is, do that. And yeah, we must honour our fallen. However, don't go into the ground with them. Because that's not what they want. They want you to be the best version of you. Alright, guys. That's it for me for tonight. Truly appreciate you sitting down and listening to me. Hopefully you've got something out of this and it's given you a better understanding and maybe you've been able to work through a few things yourself. I truly hope that's the case. I really appreciate your time. Thanks for taking the time to download this. Spread the word. Let people know. And look, I've said rest in peace, you know, about Granddad a couple of times, however, I don't think that he is. I think he's fucking causing mischief wherever he is, you know. And thank fuck for that, because that's where I'm going. Not now, not for a very long time. However, you know. However, wherever you are, mate, thank you. And just keep going. Thanks, mate. Thanks, Granddad. And thanks to you guys. We'll talk soon. Cheers.
1, 2, 3, go. Breathe out so I can breathe you in.
Always been out of here, out of my head. I sang, and I wonder when I sing along with you if everything could ever feel this real forever. If anything could ever be this good again, the only thing I'll ever ask of you, gotta promise not to stop when I say when. She sang, I sing along with you. If everything could ever feel this real forever, if anything could ever be this good again, the only thing I'll ever ask of you, you gotta promise not to stop when I say when.